This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt should say host, but also realtors with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. So excited to have Kyle Green back on the show, ace mortgage broker, owner of Green Mortgages, and just overall great guy, past guest, fan favorite, so many things. Kyle is just a great commentator on the market.
Commentator on the market, Adam, for a few reasons. One, he's, as he points out, he's been literally a broker for half of his life. So he's been in the game a long time. He's one of the busiest brokers in the country, and he's just a really intelligent guy. We had Kyle back on the show today to really just, first and foremost, you know, check up on the market. But really, it was a conversation about how the war in the Middle East impacts inflation in Canada and essentially the mortgage market and the Vancouver real estate market. So, you know, every time you think you've figured out what the risks are this year, another one comes to the fore, and we break it down today on the show with Kyle Green. So it's a great episode for sure.
Yeah, Matt. And stay tuned, because I'm talking to a lot of people that are going through renewals right now, and I'm still seeing some pretty attractive rates out there, particularly when it comes to 3-year fixed rates. You know, I've seen a lot of great options out there for people, but they seem to be all over the map, depending on if you're looking at major banks or credit unions or working with brokers. I'm seeing quite a discrepancy in what's being offered to people. So stay tuned, though, because if you do have a renewal this year, don't sleep on it. There's potential that rates are going up.
There's definitely potential, and Kyle has some strategies how to hedge in this market. If, you know, I think I put it to him, your renewals in November 2026. What should I be doing today? And there's some strategies out there that make a lot of sense. So stay tuned for that. Before we get to our talk with Kyle, Adam, there's a couple of headlines that caught my attention this week. I want to just run down a couple of them with you in the spirit of keeping everyone up to date. First off, Adam, news this week, Canada's population shrank for the first time since World War II. This was confirmed this week from Stats Can, down 0.2% year over year from January 2025 to January 2026. Vancouver, they are saying, is one of the most exposed, if not the most exposed city in the country. Immigration has driven 80% of Vancouver's population growth historically. So not great for the market here. In fact, there was no headlines this week that were great for the market. The second one that caught my attention.
Well, just to add that, Matt, because I mean, I think this really ties in particularly for people that are potentially renting their home or their condo this year, because, you know, with that comes demand headwinds for rentals in Vancouver, fewer international students, fewer temporary workers, fewer rental tenants overall. And that's already showing up in falling rents right now. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The rents have been falling and places have been vacant for months. Some of the people that I know that are trying to rent places out. So not great news there. In a similar light, developer insolvencies keep piling up. Wave developments, so that's foreclosure and receivership on two completed Vancouver projects. This is interesting because often, you know, we're seeing holes in the ground where pre-sale numbers are not adding up to get the financing, and we're seeing developers go into receivership. These are actually completed projects, which is, I think, a first. A couple other new names added this week: Minglian, Merchant House. The only twist is CBRE just named Vancouver as the top market for lender appetite in Canada. So, interesting development there. And last but not least, I think Kerry Gold wrote another article about the bailing of condo investors in the Globe and Mail. As she says, and talks to a couple of realtors in the market, rents are falling, purpose-built rental supply is incoming, investors are trying to sell units, and the word on the street is 3 to 5 years to break even from this point moving forward. So not a lot of great headlines. I don't even know if this new segment actually works, Adam, because I feel like crying. Your thoughts?
Well, no, I was going to say the only other thing I was going to mention is that the Vancouver approved its first official development plan. So this was after following a March 11th public hearing, the ODP establishes a 30-year citywide land use framework expected to come into effect March 31st. So this is, of course, pending discussions with Metro Vancouver. So that could be something to flag for the development community. And I guess it has the potential to remove some friction in the approval process. We will see how this plays out. But Matt, we do have the segment to remain that remains nameless.
We do, but I just wanted to say before that, this is not confirmed yet. I don't want to get ahead of my skis, but I have gotten ahead of my skis a few times in the past. Josh White, the chief city planner, we're in talks to have Josh come on the show. Nothing confirmed yet.
That'll be incredible.
That would be a hot topic. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, we do have that segment that remains nameless. Adam, this week, in light of our conversation with Kyle, all things rate related, I went on Polymarket. Okay, so Polymarket is, are you familiar with Polymarket, Adam?
I'm very, very familiar, Matt. Yes, it's where I get all my
your life savings are in it, John. Yeah. So, well, Polymarket is a prediction market where you can actually bet on all sorts of things. I think the word on the street is it's destroying any male under the age of 30 right now. There is a bet to be made on whether or not the Bank of Canada will raise interest rates this year. It's in real time. It's with real people's money. It makes astonishingly accurate bets all the time. So I went on Polymarket to see exactly where we're at. So the quiz question this week is, Adam, on Polymarket right now, there's a live prediction market asking, will the Bank of Canada raise interest rates at any point in 2026? So I'm going to give you three options. What probability is the market currently giving that? Is it 19%, 42%, or 79%? What is the probability of the Bank of Canada raising rates this year? But before we get to that, Adam, we have a hot yes. new listing. This one's a unique one. Let's talk about
yes. it. Well, you know what? These never come on the market. So this is definitely one we want to flag on the show. Next week, we have a boat slip in Marina Side, False Creek, that is a strata boat slip. So it's completely freehold. It's yours. It's 35 by 20 is the dimensions. As I said, these never come on the market. So really excited to have this. It's listed at $599,900 and just in time to park your boat this upcoming summer. So if you want more information about that, feel free to get in touch or you can check it out on our website, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Question for you, Adam. Was the sold plan useful in getting this boat slip ready for market?
You know what? I think the thing is the sold plan is useful for anything that you're selling. I mean, even if you're selling a bike on Craigslist, you should have the sold plan, Matt. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, click sell with us and get the hottest tips on how to get your home sold in any market for top dollar. Matt, let's get back to this question though.
Yeah. Okay. So we had, this is Bank of Canada. What are the chances interest rates are raised this year? There's three options, 19%, 42%, or 79%. What's the smart money? What's the crowd, the wisdom of the crowd saying right now, Adam?
Well, I would say I'm going to go with C. And the reason being is I've been reading about as many as 4 interest rate increases this year coming to the market. So we'll see, but it's got to be higher than than A or B. So yeah, I'm going to go C.
Adam, you are wrong, thankfully. It is 42% right now, which I was surprised at as well, because I feel like I saw, I think, as you did, talk of 3 or 4 interest rate increases. The only challenge, I guess, is that the jobs numbers are terrible. And I think thus far, inflation has been trending in the right direction. But yeah, it's only 43 cents on the dollar. So 43%. So everybody rest easy.
Matt, without further ado, why don't we cut to this conversation with someone who actually knows what's happening with rates this year, Kyle Green.
Enjoy.
Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zentera Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zentera is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing, because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlin sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown. And we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia,
serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakwin, please reach out to us at oakwin.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
Okay, so we're here with perennial guest, fan favorite, back on the podcast, Kyle Green, owner and founder at Green Mortgage. How you doing, Kyle?
I'm good. I'm good. Do you tell everybody that they're perennial favorites, or is it just me?
No, most people that are returning guests are past guest fan favorites. I feel like you've now been on the show so many times, you get the special handle of perennial.
Nice.
I came up with that this morning.
Yeah. It sounded new.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome back to the show, Kyle. For people who have not heard you on the show or don't know about you, can you briefly tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yep. I've been a broker for over 19 years now. So exactly half of my entire lifetime and basically my entire adult life, which is kind of nuts. So been one of the top brokers in the country for quite some time, like top 25 since 2017. So I do a lot of business. A lot of our clients are real estate investors and or self-employed. So that's kind of our niche, working with those groups of people. And I'm a bit of a finance nerd. That's probably why you want to talk to me today about what's going on with rates and what's happening in the world. So yeah.
That's exactly it. You know, maybe we'll start off broad, Kyle, before we get into the details. How's the mortgage market right now?
Depends on who you ask. So we've actually been much busier to start the year. Like literally the first or second week of January, activity levels picked up quite a bit. I couldn't say the same for late last year. Like Q4 of 2025 was pretty quiet. There was not a lot of activity or action, but that changed quite a bit. And I think it comes down to client base a little bit, because a lot of our clients are investors. I do find that investors are more likely to enter a market a little earlier than, let's say, a first-time home buyer. First-time homebuyers are a bit more likely to say, I need to wait until I've seen that we've bottomed out in the market and then that prices are going up for 2 or 3 months in a row, and then I jump in, which often is too late by that point. Investors or that type of mindset individual is more likely to say, I'd rather go in a bit early because I found the place that I like and it's a good price and I don't have to bid over 3 other people or 5 other people to do that. So I do find they're a little bit earlier on the curve. So some of my brokers in my brokerage, for instance, are not quite as busy at this moment. They're still a little bit slow, but we've actually ramped up considerably. Like our new lead flow coming in is like 3 times more than it was in Q4 of last year. And our closings are increasing at a pretty significant rate. Like this March and April, we have more deals closing than we have in like a year almost. So yeah, I can't complain too much. On top of that, we have refinancing is an opportunity right now. It seems like we've kind of hit the low point in rates. And this is different than realtors, of course, where, you know, purchases and sales is where you guys, you know, make your money. But for us, purchases is one way, but also refinances and renewals. And because of the fact that this year has more renewals than we've ever seen in the history of mortgage renewals in Canada, that in itself is an opportunity. Lots of people are coming up for renewal. Maybe they want to consolidate some debt. Maybe they just want to negotiate just for a better rate or whatever the opportunity is. There's just way more activity because of that factor too. So even if the real estate market is just as bad as it was last year, it's actually easy for us as brokers to expect 15 to 20% growth this year, just on the back of the fact that there's so many renewals coming up this year.
Right. You know, maybe if I understand, Kyle, are you saying kind of the smart money is actually getting excited about the market again? Is that what you're finding?
Yeah. So like if I was to draw kind of a U curve, right? Prices are on the downward motion on the U curve. I feel like what a lot of investors are doing is they're saying, you know what? I will find the right place and I will undercut the market and get below the current market valuations. Because if I look around enough and find a motivated seller who's willing to get, you know, get rid of that property, then I will be able to undercut that market. And then maybe the bottom of that U curve of the market values never quite hits the low point that I was able to negotiate because I was the only buyer standing there and showing up at the open house on the weekend, right? So I think that if you look at it, there's certain types of sellers that may be more motivated than others, such as developers who sold out 90% of their units and all of their profit is in those last 10 units that they have to sell. They want to get their money out. Their bank wants their construction loan to get paid out. You know, they want to get their cash out and move on. So I'm finding, because my wife and I are kind of watching the market as well, wondering, I wonder what kind of opportunities might come up in this type of climate. And we're starting to see, this developer dropped price a month ago, and then they just dropped prices again. And I wonder if we wait and maybe another month from now, they'll drop again. And those are motivated sellers, right? And then you're going to have some people that are just needing to move. Condos in Vancouver are kind of soft right now. So there's going to be some motivated sellers that just have a tough time moving. And if they have to sell or are very motivated to sell, then prices will come down more on those than somebody who doesn't need to sell.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you're seeing more investors, businesses booming when it comes to renewals. What about applications in general? I'm just thinking for somebody out there who's trying to gauge the market, because there's obviously when you're seeing more applications, generally that turns into more sales volume, right?
Correct. Yeah. And I would say this type of climate, it's not the same percentage. Like in general, every two applications turns into one completed transaction. I expect it to be a slightly lower percentage in this climate because there's less motivation from a buyer to jump on the first thing they see, right? It's not like 2021 where, oh my God, I just have to get into something. I think people are going to say, thinking the same thing, which is, well, if I can get a really good deal, then I'm in. And so I think that we'll see a slightly lower percentage of those actually turn into deals. But because the number of applications is way higher, like literally three times higher than we were looking at just to finish last year, we're starting to see a lot more activity and a lot of accepted offers going on because people are finding deals.
And do you measure kind of year over year as well? So it's like you're looking from now to last quarter. Last March, this was like, you know, all the tariff talk. I feel like 2025, we started busy. And then by March, you were like, what happened? How do we compare to last year? Do you have that? You're the data guy. Do you have those numbers?
Yeah, I do. So last year, January started off with a bang, just like this January did. And it's like, great. But I remember what happened last year, right? The tariff thing came in. And then February, it started to tail off a little bit. And then by March, the spring market had died. It just was a dead cat bounce, as you know, the stock people like to say. So it just finished and ended. This is ramping up. So there is more activity and people are still actively buying properties. And week to week, it's like, okay, that was really busy and that was moderately busy. But We're not seeing this steep drop off where people are getting completely uninterested in buying. There's always some level of concern with what's going on in the marketplace, and we'll talk about rates in a while, I'm sure. But we're still seeing that the market activity is quite good. It has not dropped off like it did last year.
So tariffs were last year, of course, I guess ongoing, right? And of course we have Kuzma to talk about. But Iran is this year, the war in the Middle East. Obviously, that's changed the calculation for a lot of people. Rattled bond markets, potentially has pushed fixed rates higher, as I understand. Although I've heard of some people renewing right now, and it seems like pretty stable still. Tell us, Kyle, like how has this Middle East war impacted the mortgage world?
Quite a bit. So I know you're mentioning that on renewals hasn't really affected a lot of those people, but we're literally just seeing interest rates increase just now. So we had one of the major banks just moved up a couple of days ago. Another major bank just told us earlier this week that they're going up. I communicated with them this morning because they still haven't released what they're going up by. But based on my call this morning, going up by 0.3%, which is a big, big move up. That's a big leap, yeah. And in fact, they even said that the pricing guys and the treasury guys were wanting to move the variable discount as much as 0.7%. And I haven't seen the rate sheet, and I doubt that's actually going to be the movement upwards. But that is the last time that I saw variable rate discounts move by that much was COVID. That was like the day where businesses were getting told, nobody's able to come to the office anymore. Like that was, I think it was March 13th of 2020 or whatever, when all of a sudden the first bank to move said, as of 3 hours from now, our variable rate goes from prime minus 0.7 to prime. I remember that very, very vividly. So I don't suspect that that's going to be the case, but long story short, fixed rates are moving up. And when it comes to renewals, lenders do tend to like book a rate for a certain period of time and then reach out to the client on that. And so sometimes there's a bit of a lag time where rates have already moved up in the marketplace, but the renewals that are getting communicated to clients haven't quite shifted. But if you don't take that renewal, there's usually a deadline on how long you can take to get the renewal. If you got offered a good renewal rate in the next, and you're communicating with your bank right now, there's a good chance that you're probably going to find that that renewal rate is better than you could get if you shopped it elsewhere. Because probably by the time that most people are listening to this, rates have probably gone up with most major lenders by at least 0.1 or 0.2, but in some cases, even 0.3.
Wow. Okay. You know, we've talked a lot, had you on a lot in the past, or in the past 2 years, let's say, talking about the big mortgage cliff, the mortgage renewal cliff that seems to have, I guess it's still... there's a bit of a delay on that, but it seems like that kind of has come and passed and has not had the significant impact that people thought it would have. There's still a lot of people, like you mentioned at the outset, that are renewing this year. If you have a renewal in, say, I don't know, November right now, like what are you thinking strategically? Is it kind of like sit on your hands? This is a very dynamic environment, or should people be thinking about different strategies at this point? What should people be thinking?
Interesting that you picked November, because we literally were just going through a scenario where a client has a renewal coming up in November, and I did the math on it. It's sitting here right in front of me, so I can actually go through a live example with you. So we had a client that's coming up for renewal. They have a really low rate too, so they'd be... they're at 2.21% 5 year, and it's coming up for renewal in November. It's a $600,000 mortgage. And so the plan with these people is to send in a rate hold. We can hold the rate for up to 4 months, and that rate hold then would last us into July. And so we'd be breaking the mortgage early if we pull the trigger on it. We'd be breaking it about 3.5 months early, because it's early November that they'd be renewing, and we're into late March right now. So when we look at the math on it, there's two factors. There's two costs to breaking the mortgage early. First is the 3 month interest penalty to break it early. That worked out to be about $3,900 approximately. The other cost is foregoing the 2.2% interest rate on that mortgage and moving this into a new fixed rate contract at a rate of over 4%. And so when we looked at the math, the penalty is about $3,900 and the difference in interest rates was about $3,400. So the cost to break the mortgage early would be $7,300. On the flip side, if we get the rate hold, and even if nothing else changes other than this 0.3% increase that's happening like right now, like tomorrow or Friday, assuming that that doesn't change, the 0.3% on the $600,000 mortgage works out to be $9,200 over 5 years. So there's a $9,200 savings compared to a $7,300 cost to breaking the mortgage early. And that's assuming that there's no further upward trends. Now, what you can do is you can hold the rate for 4 months and make the decision during that time period. It will only strengthen the likelihood of the math being in your favor to break early if rates keep climbing. But this could be a false start where maybe rates come back down and then you're like, okay, great. I'm just going to sit and wait and see what happens. So it's an interesting situation right now. We have seen circumstances where rates go up and then they come back down. Maybe the war in Iran is settled in a month and then things can settle back down, but maybe not. Maybe this keeps getting worse before it gets better and rates keep accelerating. So in general, even if you had a mortgage renewal that's coming up in a year from now or a year and a half, et cetera, you can do the math on it and see what it looks like. And we do this all the time for clients. We're doing a lot of clients in refinancing where they have maybe a year or a year and a half left. And the penalty versus the savings of breaking the mortgage early versus the amount of savings over that remainder of the term is usually close to break even or slightly negative. So meaning that you don't recoup all of your penalty costs with the lower rate that you might be moving into if you had a higher rate before, especially clients that took a 3-year fix like 2 years or 1.5 years ago. However, if rates keep climbing, now if you take a new 5-year fixed, instead of coming up for renewal in a year or a year and a half and then getting a rate that might be 0.3 or 0.5% higher, instead, you're in a low fixed rate in the low fours for 5 years in total. And that savings on the back end of the new term you'd be getting is generally substantially more than the difference in penalty versus savings of the remainder of the term. Very recently, because of the war in Iran, the expectations for interest rates has changed drastically. It was that in general, rates would go up by about 0.2 to 0.3% per year for the next 5 years. And that's the bond market, which impacts fixed rates. Very recently, the international traders who bet on this, all of a sudden, the 1-year trend is that rates will be up by 0.6 or 0.7%, which is a massive change. But it is actually approximately how much the bond rates have gone up in the last 30 days. It's a very massive increase. And so it's not that far to left field that rates could be that much higher in 12 months. And you probably want to get a rate hold just in case things keep climbing, because it may make a lot of financial sense to break early if that's the case.
So, and that's on the fixed side. What about variable? First off, I guess we can talk about Bank of Canada hiking. You know, I heard up to 3, which kind of mirrors what you're talking about in the bond market. Potentially up to 3 times this year now, when I felt like it felt fairly stable a month or 2 ago. But yeah, I guess, so 1, Bank of Canada, what are they going to do? But 2, can we run, and I know you don't probably have the numbers in front of you, but let's say same scenario, November, but it's somebody with a variable rate. Does it still make sense to get that rate hold? And what does that look like?
Yeah, so first of all, on the expectations on the prime rate, that has changed. And yes, the expectations now are that they may go up as many times as 3 times over the next 12 months. I do find in general, there's a bit of a divide between the international traders that bet on what the Bank of Canada is going to do and then the local economists. Almost all Canadian economists have been a little less likely to say, yeah, our rates are going to go up for sure. Because I think the underlying data in Canada is still that we're relatively weak and we're very concerned about job losses and economic growth and whatnot here. So I think that there's a bit of a divide there. But even then, economists are still thinking, well, you know, maybe it's not 3 hikes, but maybe it's not decreases either, or maybe it's 1 hike. So it's hard to say. I would probably be somewhere less than 3 hikes in the next 12 months, but also not likely for us to see rate decreases. There is a case to be made for there to be a potential circumstance where rates may decrease even substantially given the circumstance, but it seems less likely. That's not being priced in. Now, the good thing is if you're in a variable rate and you're coming up for renewal and you're worried about rates and where they're going, you can lock in your mortgage into a fixed rate at any time with no cost. And so you're actually in a really good position here where you don't need to be doing math on, okay, does it make sense to break my mortgage and do this and do that? You can literally just get a quote from your lender and say, what rate can I lock into today into a fixed rate? And you can just lock it in. You can lock it in for 5 years, depending on the term remaining on your mortgage. You could lock in for 3 years, depending on the bank. So you can give yourself some rate and payment stability if that's what you're looking for, if you're worrying about where the trends are heading.
Mm. And if somebody's asking you right now thoughts on that, it sounds like you're less concerned about the Bank of Canada hiking dramatically.
Yes, but I am more concerned about where fixed rates are heading.
Yeah.
There seems to be a lot of upward pressure, but long story short, the pendulum moves all the time. And for quite some time, it was pro-variable, that the trend lines were showing that from late 2023 until January of 2025, variable was the one way to go. And then tariffs came out, that was inflationary. Then it was like 3-year fixed or 5-year fixed, you know, somewhere in that kind of a toss-up. The last 30 days is really heavily skewing towards 5-year fixed, outperforming all of the other terms by quite a significant margin, especially if you're holding a rate as of today's rates, not in, you know, 2 or 3 days. Unfortunately, by the time that many people may reach out to get quotes on a fixed rate with either us or their bank, they've probably gone up from low fives to maybe, or low fours to maybe mid fours. So that might, again, change the dynamics and change the math depending on where exactly things settle in the next couple of days. But long story short, rates are going up. And there's a lot of interesting things to look at. Do you want to get super nerdy on some stuff?
I definitely do. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's where I live.
I know. I asked the question.
Just in being a super nerd.
Yeah. it was a rhetorical question. And I'm sure that a lot of your listeners may find this interesting. And I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on this because this is pretty layered, deep stuff. But as part of my, I did a webinar last week and also sent out an email and talked a little bit about this, but there's a very interesting thing and concept and global phenomenon called the petrodollar. And so long story short, back in the 70s, the US was trying to get some security on oil imports. That was back when inflation was going crazy and the OPEC was starting to control oil supply. And I mean, I wasn't alive back then, but you could go to a gas station that just said, sorry, no gas, right? That was a crazy time back then. And the US was trying to create some security on its imports. And one of the things that came out of that was them negotiating with Saudi Arabia to buy tons of their oil, and that the US would offer protection, military protection, in return for the Saudis selling oil to the US in USD, in the US dollar. So it also gave the US another currency, you know, worldwide currency reserve system. So the US dollar became even more entrenched as a reserve currency around the world. Because not just Saudi Arabia did this, but then if Saudi Arabia is the largest exporter in that area, all of the other smaller countries followed suit. And next thing you know, basically around the world, the US dollar is being, oil is being traded in US dollars. Now, the reason that this whole war in Iran situation is relevant here is that Strait of Hormuz, it's called, that little waterway. So 20 to 30% of all oil exports come through that little strait. And Iran is threatening and saying, we're going to bomb every oil ship that tries to go through there. We're going to just destroy it. However, we will let any ships that go through there that are selling oil in Chinese yuan, we will allow that ship to pass through. Now, what's happening here is there's a lot to unpack, but basically by Iran saying we're not going to let any ships through there, that's creating an oil shortage. We saw oil prices like go up through the roof. You know, anybody that's been filling up their gas tank is like, oh, wow, that's a lot more expensive. And that's because if you shorten the supply by 20 or to 30%, that has a massive increase to oil prices, right? They've gone up, you know, 30 or 40% just in the last 30 to 45 days. Now, So we know then if there's inflationary pressure, oil is in so many consumer products and it's in the construction of everything. It's not just filling up your gas tanks and filling up your airplanes. It's actually a key, petroleum is used in a lot of things to produce items like plastics, et cetera. So that creates a lot of inflation. That's one of the reasons that rates are going up. But there's another more sinister or more concerning item here, which is that if Iran and China and other countries that have formed what's called the BRICS, B-R-I-C-S, it was called. So that was Brazil, Iran, China, Russia. These countries all got together a couple of years ago, and they're trying to say, we don't want everything to be traded in USD around the world. We want to create a new reserve currency. And so now, if Iran's trying to use this as an opportunity to kind of push that agenda even further, then this might be a potential collapse of the petrodollar around the world. And if that happens, the whole petrodollar system is that if US dollars is being used to trade oil, now these countries have sold oil and are holding USD. And then what do you do with the US dollars? Generally, they invest it in the United States. And so then they're buying US stocks. They're buying US bonds. They're doing these things. There's demand for those US items. If there's, especially if they're parking in, let's say, US bonds, that pushes the rates down. Because if you have a lineup of people out the door wanting to buy your bonds, you don't have to raise, you don't have to have as high of an interest rate to raise all your money. So you can lower interest rates and still get the money coming in and flowing in the door. But if all of a sudden people don't have as many US dollars they're holding to invest in the US, what's going to happen is it'll actually push interest rates up, because now you'll have to increase interest rates to raise demand for your bonds, which then pushes interest rates up in North America in particular and kind of around the world. So it's a big problem that could be a much larger issue. If this is a big push to end the petrodollar, we might actually see this being a real systemic problem, mostly in the United States, but it will spin off into Canada. The only thing is Canada's not quite as tied into this. You know, it probably will disconnect that high, you know, that really close correlation between US rates and Canadian rates, because this is going to be more of a US issue than a Canadian issue. But this could have a massive impact and something just to watch for. So again, super nerdy. There's lots of great YouTube videos and stuff that people can watch if they wanted to learn about it, about the petrodollar and what's happening in Iran. But that's the thing I'm kind of keeping my eyes on, and doesn't keep me up at night. But this will have a much larger impact on overall long-term interest rates in the US and by extension, Canada.
So if I understand, it's not just inflation when it comes to oil prices and the kind of reverberations throughout the economy, but more of a structural shift that leads to higher interest rates across the board.
Correct.
Or especially in the United States.
Yep.
This kind of dovetails with a question I had for you, Kyle, because I'm thinking, so we have a weaker job market in Canada, a weakening job market, I should say. You know, the tariff threats, Kuzma coming up, the Iran conflict. Is there a version of this chaos that actually benefits Canada in some way?
To a certain extent. So I think in an interesting...
Canada, you know, and Vancouver real estate. Let's put Vancouver real estate.
Right, yeah. So there's a few things to unpack there. So in theory, if the US goes into a recession because of the end of the petrodollar, that would likely create more job loss for Canadians that are selling their wares to the US and abroad. And of course, the US is our biggest trading partner. So that's a bad thing for the economy that would generally lower demand for people wanting to buy homes if they're losing their jobs. So that's bad. On the flip side, if people are losing their jobs, the government of Canada cares about inflation a lot, but they also really care about job loss too. And so there's actually a case to be made where if people are losing their jobs and there's less demand for domestic product, then there'd be less inflation and we'd be losing jobs at the same time. That's a case to be made for actually dropping the prime rate, not increasing it. And if you're decreasing interest rates, then that's generally good for real estate. So there's two kind of countermeasures on that side of things, which is interesting to observe. So hard to say which of these would outweigh the other. As a, you know, going back to the Kuzma conversation, it's interesting that the US started the whole tariff thing last year, and then Canada's been trying to work on, okay, we need to create some new relationships, and those new relationships might really help us. We might actually be thanking Mr. Trump, not for the war in Iran and the end of the petrodollar and all that kind of stuff, but we might be actually thanking him if this whole petrodollar thing goes and really becomes a major issue and concern. we might be kind of thankful that the tariff thing had a 1 year head start where we had an opportunity to create some new relationships around the world in different currencies before we're able to get into this situation with the petrodollar. So who knows? Well, there's a lot of moving parts to it, but I can see both sides of the coin where it could be good or bad.
You know, I've heard out there a little bit about appraisals coming in under the accepted offer price. You know, I'm still thinking about the stress test a lot and hearing about challenges there. Like, is there, maybe I'll put it to you this way. What is in your mind, what is the biggest challenge for buyers of Vancouver real estate right now in terms of financing?
Appraisals are a thing. I would say it's way more of a thing on pre-sales. That's a big issue. Almost every pre-sale, we start off by saying, okay, let's get an appraisal on the property because we're almost expecting it to come in lower than what the initial purchase price was or is. So that's an issue. We do see some appraisals coming in low on purchases that are on the open market. And maybe, as we kind of discussed earlier, maybe a large percentage of my clients are a bit more aggressive on offers and whatnot, perhaps. And maybe
they're not overpaying.
Yeah, they're not overpaying. They're trying to underpay. And so I don't have a lot of used product hitting that issue. I do have a lot on refinances. I do think it's natural human tendency. And you guys probably run into this all the time when you're listing something. It's like, hey, here are the market comparables for homes that are similar to yours. Oh, my home's better than that one. My home's better than that one because of that. My home's better than that one because of that.
So you don't understand how special my home is, Kyle.
Exactly. Right? So that's a thing. And that's just human tendency. I mean, all of us do it. That's just the way it is. But the same then applies to, okay, when we ask the client, what do you think your home is worth? There hasn't really been an adjustment period. And even when they look at the BC assessment, those are dated July 1st of 2025. And I found a lot of the price slips actually happen in the second half of 2025, right? Yeah. So BC assessments are in many cases actually too high compared to current values, especially if it's condos or whatnot. So that is an issue for us on pre-sales and refinancing for sure. Valuations are a tough one. There's been a general tightening with lenders, not a overarching tightening with lenders, but a general tightening with lenders. So that's something that we're dealing with as well. But overall, it's not terrible for us. We're doing okay, I think, overall.
You know, Kyle, you've owned a lot of real estate. You've helped thousands of people buy real estate. Somebody's thinking of selling in the next 6 to 12 months. They come to you and they say, Kyle, I could sell tomorrow. I could sell a year from now, but I want to sell in the next 6 to 12 months. Timing wise, what are you telling them? Pull the trigger now, push it down the line.
Yeah, good question. So I think it depends on what you're doing with it. So a term in economics is called opportunity cost. So what if you sell now and maybe it's a weaker, let's just assume that it's a weaker market now and it's projected to improve in the future, which I think in general, people would kind of say, well, that's a reasonable expectation to have that it's bad now, but it should get a little bit better, at least in detached and yeah. Non-condos. I think condos still probably have a couple of years left in it to not be great. And I'm not saying it's going to be a decreasing valuations for condos for 3 years, but I think that it may take 3 years before we see meaningful increases to values in condos. And so I guess the question is, why are you selling and what are you going to do with the capital when you sell? If you're selling a $500,000 condo so you can buy a $1.5 million detached home, then you're getting out of a market in a property type that's probably not going to perform very well and into a property type that probably should perform better. And that's partially because the cycles are much shorter. So when you look at detached properties can be built in 12 months, whereas condos can be 3 to 7 years. So the cycle is that although condos are weaker right now, you still have more and more condos continuing to get completed. Whereas the cycle for detached can start and stop much faster. So if there's not a lot of buyer demand, then builders just stop building detached for a period of time until it corrects. And then once there's more demand than supply, then builders start to build property again. So you're going to see shorter wavelengths, so to speak, in the markets. But the way that I look at it, which is more simple than this, is if let's say the market overall is down 10%. Okay, I'm going to take a 10% hit on my $500,000 condo. I'm going to lose 50 grand. But if I'm upgrading to a $1.5 million place and that's down 10%, I'm going to save 150 grand on my acquisition. So upgrading in a market like this actually can make financial sense if you're doing that. Whereas downgrading in this kind of market and downsizing, maybe now is not the right time to do that. So that's one thing to look at. And then the second thing we're helping a lot of clients do right now is they want to sell, but they don't want to sell now. And we're doing a lot of, I call it self bridges. So we're setting up their financing on a purchase because they say, this is a great price, great property, but I don't want to sell in this market. So we're getting them a mortgage and a line of credit for their purchase. And sometimes we're refinancing their existing property to get equity out so that we have a down payment for the purchase. And then we're buying the new home. They're going to use their existing property as a rental short term until the market improves. And then they're going to sell it when the market is stronger. And then we design the mortgage so that, let's say that they're expecting net sale proceeds on their existing home to be $1 million. Then we'd set it up so that their new mortgage on their new home might be, you know, a $500,000 mortgage, because that's what you're going to be left with once you sell your existing home. And then we put the rest of it, the other $1 million, on a line of credit. And then you pay all of that off in full once you sell your existing home. And then you're back to square one as if you had sold and bought simultaneously, effectively. Mm. You just have to be mindful of the fact that you're carrying two properties. And then how much rent are you getting in versus what are the mortgage payments you're carrying? Because you're carrying more debt between the two properties, right, in that case. But when you look at like selling in a better market, if you look at, well, we're selling a $1.5 million property and buying a $2 million home. You know, if you sell now and you're going to take a 10% hit on it, that's 150 grand. Like, you could carry a lot of interest costs for a long time to wait until the market rebounds if you can afford the monthly payments for that. And in many cases, the math does show, and maybe we won't go into too much detail now, but the math often does show that you're better off to hold it and wait for a stronger rebound in real estate values at a cash flow loss, because 150 grand is a lot of money. You could be cash flow negative 4 grand a month and you could still carry that for like 3 years before you break even, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. To put a really fine point on it, Kyle, I have a $500,000 condo. I'm going to sell it in March right now. We're at the end of March, April. Let's say April 2026 or April 2027. I'm leaving the market. There's no opportunity cost. There's no trading up or trading down. Is it better to sell that condo today or next year? Obviously, you don't have a crystal ball. I'm just curious. Best guess.
Yeah. Wow. Hard to say. If you ask me about detached or townhouses, I would say better to sell next year. I think that those markets will be better than they are now. Condos?
And those are the best. Actually, I feel like those areas of the market are like a good house or a nice townhome right now is still moving.
They are.
It's kind of that tier two stuff that is sitting. But anyway, I don't want to get in your way here, Kyle. I want to hear that.
Please get in my way. This is a tough question. I know I'm going to have some people say, you told me to wait or you told me to sell and look at the market. My inclination is in a climate like this to take a little risk off the table and sell now, because I think it's possible it could still be worse in a year from now. That's hard though. I don't know. I could see it go either way. It's almost a coin flip for me on whether it's better or worse. Yeah. I think short term it might still get, the condo market might get a little bit worse, and then maybe by next spring it might at least flatten out. So I guess in that scenario, then you're probably slightly worse to sell next year than you are to sell now. I'm just worried that you list it for 500 and you get one of those greedy investors that work for Green Mortgage that are trying to buy it for 400, you know? And then like, oh my God, these are the only offers coming in. And you know, so I worry a little bit that you just, if you don't hit your price, then I think it's probably fine to not pull the trigger if you're not close to what the current market is and wait it out. But that's a really tough one for me.
So sell today unless you got Kyle Green on the other side is the answer.
It's definitely a better market to buy than sell, let's be honest. And so that's where a lot of people are kind of doing that self-bridge option. But the other thing too is like, you know, why are they selling, Matt? Like, do they have money to invest in something else? Like, what are you going to put the money into? Stocks? Like, stock market is losing $1 trillion a day at times in the last 30 days, right? So where else are you going to put the capital? If you have something that you can put it into that earns you a positive return, then I would probably pull the trigger now and then get that positive returns elsewhere. Because I think there's, if it's 50-50 that condos are the same price next year, then why wait? Just pull it out and put it into something else that earns you a return, right? That's my thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. There's not a lot of safe spots for capital right now. That's my feeling. Nope. Maybe we'll leave it there, Kyle. We do have a quick segment, the Five Wire. You've answered these questions before, but your life is ever changing. So we'd love to see where you're at. Do you have time to stick around for this?
Of course.
All right. One book. You've always been a good book recommender on the show. One book you've recently read that people should take a look at.
So I actually just finished re-listening. It's easier for me to listen to books while I'm driving than to sit down and read the book. But this one always gets me to think maybe I should actually read it after I listen to it. And it's The Ultimate Sales Machine by Chet Holmes. It is by far the best business book I've ever read. I've reread that so many times. And every time I go through it, I'm like, oh man, there's so many gold nuggets in here. So
yeah,
highly recommend that book. Yeah, it's great, especially for anybody that has a sales-based industry or company. The information in there and the way that he explains it and describes it is awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah, that is a great book. In the last year or two, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life? You've been playing more tennis, I think.
I have been playing more tennis, working on that. There's actually something different that's kind of seeped more into my life the last little while. And the life seems very difficult. And so I'm, sometimes you look at it like, why is life so difficult? I mean, obviously being a mortgage broker or being a realtor in this climate, it's been challenging, right? And one of the things that I believe in is that our thoughts create our reality. And yet for years and years and years, I didn't really do anything like real about that other than, each day trying to, have good thoughts. But it really lends itself to why don't you meditate, Kyle? If that's something that you believe in, then meditation is literally sitting there and setting your morning and setting your intention and getting ready for the day. And it's tough for me because I've always been, I'm that right brain guy, math guy, science guy, physics, tangible things. But there's a part of me too that's kind of metaphysical as well. There's a lot of things that we don't know how things work and how the world works, and things are unexplainable. You think of somebody and then they randomly call you. I haven't talked to them in 5 years and they called you randomly. There's a lot of things like that that happen in our world too. And I found myself meditating much more consistently, not totally consistently, but much more consistently than I've ever have. And I just feel better and things seem to be, falling a bit more into place. So yeah, that's something that's a bit different that's happening in my life. And I have read some books about meditation too. It's just that their Ultimate Sales Machine was the most recent one I read.
And the most applicable to your business, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but that's great though. The quiet, I feel like just listening to you there, apart from actually, manifesting your destiny or reality, the world is the noisiest it's ever been in my mind, or my life is the noisiest, with 95% to 99% of it being stuff that I don't want to hear about or need to hear about. So finding that quiet time is, at the very least, is an attractive proposition. With that said, Kyle, what's a good movie you've seen lately? And I got to throw back to a couple years ago. This would have been maybe 2021, 2022. Tetris was your recommendation. Remember that Tetris movie?
Yeah.
And that was a great movie.
You liked it? Awesome. Yeah.
That was a great
movie. It was a very cool movie. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
Okay, good movie. I just watched Edge of Tomorrow. I thought that was a really cool movie. So bit of a sci-fi, but that one was with Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt. Premise of the movie is just that basically every day resets and he keeps trying to achieve something that seems impossible. And eventually, something good happens, maybe.
Something sounds like Groundhog Day with Bill Murray.
It is, but it's an action, a little different action. But add a whole bunch of action into it instead of,
Right on. I know you're an electronic music fan. Favorite band or music, something that you've been listening to in the last 6 months that people should check out?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this because I knew you were going to ask me this question when you started the question. So a DJ that I think, even if you're not super into electronic music, a DJ named Jazzy, J-A-Z-Z-Y. I'm kind of digging that lately. And part of it is the sound sounds a little bit kind of similar to like the 90s dance music. Like if you were into like Night at the Roxbury soundtrack or whatever, then some of the melodies and stuff kind of bring me back a little bit to that, but obviously with an update and you know, current flair to it. But been digging some of Jazzy's songs. They're fun and they're good. Even if you're not super into electronic music, it's good music.
All right, and last but not least, something you have purchased for under $1,500 in the last little while that has had a positive impact on your life.
Oh man. Well, okay, I'll give you two things. Number one, I got two big 32-inch monitors for my computer setup here.
Game changer.
Yeah, I don't know why. I tried to get one of those really super wide screens. And then when I tried to plug it in, my laptop, literally the graphics card wasn't sufficient to make it work. So I thought, oh, that's kind of odd. But the two 32-inch screens really helps. It's just, I don't know. It helps with activity. And then when I go home and I'm working in the evening or whatever, I'm like, these monitors are so small. Like, how do I possibly function on these 22-inch or 21-inch monitors, right? Yeah, it's so funny. So that's one. And then I haven't bought this yet, but I'm planning on buying these in the near future. But I actually want to get an upgrade to the same headphones I'm wearing right now, which is the Sony XM. Fives are the ones that I'm looking at because the sound quality is higher, but also the mic quality in particular got a lot better. So I often, when I'm working at the office, sometimes I put on the headphones and I might be listening to music while I'm doing, you know, underwriting or other activities that are on the phone. But then I like to also make calls while I have my headphones on, so I have my hands free to do things on the computer. But the microphone in the XM3s is always a bit weaker. And my wife always lets me know that there's too much background noise and this and that. Apparently they really fixed it. So if you're looking for headphones that are really good for music, but also one of the best microphones, they really upgraded that, then the Sony XM5s are apparently a really good buy.
Right on. Well, thanks for your time, Kyle. As always, it's great to have you back on. Super insightful. If people want to find out more about what you're doing, you mentioned that webinar that you had last week. You put out super useful emails. How can people get in touch?
Yep. If you want to get added to the email list, you can visit our website or you can just email us at info@greenmortgageteam.ca. And then we can point you to the webinar that we just did. We can get you added to our newsletter. We send it every 6 weeks. We line it up with when the Bank of Canada is doing an announcement. We have a ton of cool information in there, like what the trends are, short-term, medium-term, and long-term with fixed rates, same for variable rates. And we even have a little lock-in meter, like how much should you be thinking about locking in your mortgage if you're in a variable? So some super useful content. And if you'd like to get nerdy, then get nerdy with me. Reach out.
All right. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for your time, Kyle.
Thanks, Matt.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Kyle Green, ace mortgage broker and perennial fan favorite owner over at Green Mortgages.
We got to say, we stole ace mortgage broker from Ozzie Jurok because it wasn't that how Ozzie used to describe him as ace mortgage broker. I just like it. It's a
He may still describe ace, him as ace mortgage broker.
Ace is a great way to say somebody's good at something. Anyways, ace realtor Matt Scalina, what else do we got for the show before we cut for the day?
We don't have a lot. That was a super useful conversation. It got me thinking a lot about different strategies to hedge against potential interest rate increases in 2026. And hopefully listeners found that useful. If you did find it useful, Adam, you know, we have all the resources over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, but it's just really worth saying. If you're getting value from the show, if you like it, share it with a friend or a family member. And of course, we've worked with hundreds of people that have been fans of the podcast over the years. And they're some of our best clients. We would love to help in any way we can, whether that's selling a property here in Metro Vancouver or helping you buy. We are always available. And I think that's all we got for the week, Adam. So maybe I'll leave it with this. You can try me at any time. 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Yeah. And if you want to sell a boat slip, you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And of course, we got the nonpartisan line info at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Have a great week. We're back here with another great episode. And yeah.
Question for you, Adam. Did you get that listing lead by door knocking?
Actually, Matt, I was cold plunging in False Creek when I stumbled across that one. No, just kidding. But yeah, very excited to have it. And I'm telling you, these never come up. Last sale was 2023. So a high demand, best type of boat slip you can own in Metro Vancouver for sure. So, but yeah, let's see you next week and we'll be back with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.